Hello, and welcome once again to NaturalDocRadio.com. I'm Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor, and I'm here today with Dr. Herb Slavin, and we have very important information to share with our listeners. Dr. Slavin?
Thank you, Janet. Every now and then, it's probably more often than not, though, you get a one-sided report about a topic, and something that came out in the last few days is a perfect example of that. And the headline is, Long-Term Hormone Replacement Therapy Use Raises the Risk of Ovarian Cancer. The chance increases by 40% after using treatment for 5 years. Now, that's a big statement. Now, I'm not going to get down to the actual numbers, but I'll give you an example. If you have, let's say you have 1 out of 1 million women getting ovarian cancer, and that increases to 2 out of 1 million. That's not a 40% increase, that's a 50% increase, depending how you look at it. It could be a 100% increase, looking at it in different ways. But you can see how the numbers can be skewed. But that's not even the most important part of this study. Just a little background. Researchers, when they came up with this report, analyzed 52 studies looking at over 21,000 women with ovarian cancer. And the effect was the same for the two main types of hormone replacement therapy. And I think that's key.
Whoa.
What are the two main types of hormone replacement therapy? Because they don't get into that in the report that you're reading, because you think it's all hormone replacement therapy. And they say, and this is coming out of the United Kingdom, they say at the height of its popularity, hormone replacement was taken by 2 million UK women. Now, let's give a little history of hormone replacement therapy. The reason it was started was based on an observation that the incidence of premenopausal women having heart attacks was much, much less than men of the same age. So now we're looking at, I guess, say 35 to 50 years of age, women with heart attacks far less than men of the same age. But after menopause, then the incidence of heart attack equaled the incidence in men. Men and women would have the same risk. So they said, must be the hormones. So they started giving women hormones. Now, you would think off the bat that they would give women a hormone that resembled the hormones their own bodies made, but that would cost too much money, apparently. So they resorted to collecting urine from horses, specifically pregnant mares, and that's what they made Premarin from. So they gave women Premarin from horse urine, and it indeed helped to not only with the side effects of a falling estrogen level, but it did lower the incidence of heart attacks in postmenopausal women. But after a few years, they noticed something. The incidence of cancer increased, both breast cancer and ovarian cancer. So they said, They didn't think it could be the horse's estrogen having anything to do with it. They said it must be the fact that we're not giving progesterone. But here again, they didn't use progesterone because that would be the identical hormone made by a woman. They had to make their own synthetic version because that's a lot cheaper and bigger profits than that, and they gave what's called progestin. A progestin is something that resembles a progesterone, but doesn't clearly have the same effects and benefits because it's not identical to what women make in their own bodies. So they gave the women now the Premarin with the progestin.
And they called it Prempro.
Right. And this is what this is what's called HRT, hormone replacement therapy. So this is what they're referring to when they do these studies. These artificial hormones given to women. Now, they gave the progestin or the Prempro to women, and it indeed lowered the incidence of cancer that these women were getting, but it also blocked the positive effect of preventing heart disease and heart attacks. So then they sort of resorted to saying, all right, we'll use Prempro because it'll control your hot flashes. So, and that's where it's at. The one thing I've observed, and I'm sure, Jenna, you've seen the same thing, that when a woman goes to a doctor that puts them on these types of artificial hormones, Prempro, for example, one size fits all, and they never test the patients. Now, here's why they don't test the patients. What I'm talking about is hormone testing. When we test patients for hormones, the only test available is for the hormones your body makes. When you test hormones in a patient taking artificial hormones, you can't get a reading of those hormones. So what's the point of testing those patients? You can't measure those hormones. So women are given these artificial hormones. There are no tests available to see the effect on the body. Are they distorting the normal balance of estrogen to progesterone? And that's what happens. So women are given an artificial hormone and say, see you the next time you get sick. Now, the point that needs to be made is bioidentical hormones, obviously, are the hormones that are available to replace your own body's failure to make hormones. It's identical to what your body made. Now, women starting at the menarche, usually getting earlier and earlier, usually by, I guess, the age of 14 or 15, most women are producing hormones, and they'll go on producing hormones till they're at least 40 to 50 years of age. The highest hormone production is probably up until they're around 30 years of age, I think, and probably starts declining from age 25, but they're still making plenty of hormones, but they're all bioidentical, and you very rarely hear of ovarian cancer or even breast cancer in these women. And if you do, it probably has a lot to do with hormonal imbalance. Now, something, an important point that has to be made, when we talk about hormonal imbalance, we're talking about the balance between estrogen and progesterone. Now, signs of, and the imbalance comes from not having enough progesterone. Body continues to make estrogen, but the reason it stops making progesterone is usually because of stress. Because when a woman's under stress, they'll shift over to making cortisol instead of progesterone. And that's why so often you hear, speaking to women who have been diagnosed with ovarian or breast cancer, that there was a stressful event in their life within the few months prior to the diagnosis. But the nice thing is you can test your hormonal balance with a blood test. If you want to go by symptoms alone, if you're experiencing breast tenderness before your period, that's a sign of hormonal imbalance. Even mood changes could be a sign of hormonal imbalance.
When you say, Dr. Slavin, hormonal imbalance, are you specifically referring to estrogen dominance? Are there other factors that tend to come into place, into play, rather, in this discussion? And what I'm thinking about is adrenal exhaustion and thyroid dysfunction.
They, in a way, they're all related because usually stress is the underlying factor involved in all these things. But hormonal imbalance or estrogen dominance, another way of saying it, is so important. I just want to go through some of the symptoms that could tip you off to that problem. And you could have this if you're taking birth control pills, for example. It can give you the same symptoms because, again, with birth control pills, you're getting hormones that are artificial, and you can't test for them. So fibrocystic breast disease, a lot of women have that. That's a sign of estrogen dominance. Increased body fat. A lot of women will complain of swelling of their fingers before their period. They say, the ring gets tight. Those are signs. Depression and headaches can be a sign. Impairment in blood sugar control. Now, this is something you wouldn't necessarily know, but if you read an insert for blood for birth control pills, they'll say you're at risk for blood clots. They'll say the same thing if you're pregnant. You're at risk for blood clots because of the high levels of estrogen and the associated imbalance again during those periods. Decreased libido could be a sign of estrogen dominance. And of course, when you have estrogen dominance, you're at increased risk for breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and uterine cancer. So you want to be sure you're not estrogen dominant, and that you can be estrogen dominant even if you're not taking any hormones. You know, stress can make you estrogen dominant, so you should have your doctor check it and see. Now, the doctor may not recognize or know how to interpret a blood test, because he'll look at it and say, well, you're in the range, but you have to know how to determine whether there's enough progesterone to balance out the amount of estrogen. And all those symptoms I just mentioned are corrected when you balance the progesterone. And a lot of times, we'll just give women for the last 10 days prior to their expected period extra progesterone to balance out the estrogen, and that's the period when there's a increase in estrogen production. But this is not mentioned at all in this study that's trying to frighten women away from taking hormone replacement therapy. And I would say the same thing. Don't take hormone replacement therapy. Take bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. But let's go back to that list I just talked about. I'm not sure there are any drugs for fibrocystic breast disease, but they have drugs for body fat. They have drugs for fluid retention. They have drugs for headaches and depression. They have drugs for impaired blood sugar control. I'm not sure about decreased libido, if they have drugs for that.
Absolutely.
For women, what
yes,
do they have?
Yes, for women. I don't know the name of it, but I have seen an advertisement for that.
And of course, they have great treatments for uterine, ovarian, and breast cancer. Those are big money makers. Do you get my drift yet? If I give you balanced hormones in the form of bioidentical hormones, I can keep you healthier and probably avoid the need for treating all those symptoms that they use drugs to control. So that's why I think there may be some reason for these stories. They don't want women to take the drug. And by the way, the incidence that it's increasing is really very slight, even in this study, but they're really hyping it a lot. Remember I started out saying you go from 1 out of a million to 2 out of a million, that's a 50% or even a 100% increase, but it's still very slight.
Right. It's very important, I think, Dr. Slavin, to talk about what might be the sources for the bioidentical hormone replacements. The things that typically I would be working with, prescription strength hormone supports, tend to come from plants. Do you have information about the sources of the bioidentical hormone replacement therapy that is prescription?
They usually come from yams.
Yes.
Now, it really doesn't matter where they come from. What they're using that as a starting point, and then they create in the laboratory the identical molecular structure that a woman's body makes, so they're having an actual bioidentical hormone. And that's the key here, because young women making their own hormones make way higher levels than we ever give to women when we're prescribing bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. And there are no problems as far as ovarian cancer, breast cancer, uterine cancer in that age group, as long as their hormones are balanced. This again is where knowledge is important.
How frequently might you suggest to your patients who are using bioidentical hormone replacement therapy that they check their hormone levels? Because I would think that there's a possibility of a lot of different things impacting changing hormone levels.
That's a very good question. And first of all, there are a lot of different ways to give a woman a bioidentical hormone. So they can give it in pellets that are implanted in their skin. That's not my favorite use, because you can't make a change once the pellet is implanted if you have to. Plus, you know, this is what doesn't make sense to me. The argument for using that, they say, well, the hormones will be at a more steady state release, and they'll remember to take, you know, they don't have to remember to take their hormone cream or their hormone lozenge. Yeah, but they only implant estrogen. They're not implanting progesterone. So you still got to remember to take the progesterone. And if you forget, now you've created an estrogen dominant picture. And we just said all the bad things. And by the way, bioidentical hormones imbalanced will create, you know, cancer as well. So balance is very important. So I like creams that you can apply to the skin. And we combine, I see a lot of women coming from other doctors where they're getting three different creams. They get it for estrogen, they get it for progesterone, they get it for testosterone. In my experience, there's no reason that you can't combine them into one cream. So we use cream, we use a lozenge, and we use something called a BLA tablet. And that's probably my favorite because it's not messy. It's easy for women to take. The only and we use that maybe not initially, although we do sometimes use it, but the one factor you don't have that you have with cream is ways to adjust the dosage. I can, you know, lower the amount of cream someone gets because it's usually in a syringe. I don't like the click bottles. I know a lot of women get their hormones in click bottles. The only reason is I can't measure exactly, you know, I don't trust the click. I like to see it in the syringe and I can see exactly how much is you're pushing out, and you have the ability to change the dosage a little bit, a lot easier than clicking. But the BLA tablet works very well. It's absorbed, you take a pill, but it's absorbed through your lymphatics. It doesn't get through your liver. So that first pass liver is avoided. So those are the, so in answer to your question about, how often do I test women now? All right, initially I'll usually give women about a 2-month supply and probably test them in a month after they start taking it. And here's an important point. You're not just testing the woman. You're testing the compounding pharmacy that made the product, because you want to make sure that it's working the way the label says it should work. You know, so if I write the prescription out, they should this much estrogen, this much progesterone, this much testosterone, I want to see it showing up on the blood test that we do. It doesn't happen often, but I've seen it happen where either the hormone test and it comes back very low, or some things could be out of balance. So it's easy to make a mistake in compounding if you're not paying attention. It's just like it's easy to mess up a cake recipe if you're not paying attention to the ingredients you're putting in. Not that I bake, but if you're not paying attention, for example, let's say you put in twice the amount of something because you forgot you put it in once. It's going to mess up the results, isn't it, Janet?
It certainly is. Okay.
Or you leave something out. You forgot to put the baking soda in. What happens to a cake if you forget the baking soda?
It's going to fall flat. Right.
You know, so little things. If they got sidetracked and they thought they put something in and they didn't. So you want to check someone. So initially I said I when I start somebody off, they go for about 2 months and we'll check them in about 4 to 6 weeks. When we see the dose that's working for them and we don't have to make any changes, then we'll go about 3 months. Because, we're checking the woman, but we're also checking the compounding pharmacy, make sure everything is working the way we expect it.
Okay. What part does nutrient status play in how well the hormones are working to balance a woman's overall hormone picture?
Well, nutrient status plays a major role, and that's another reason why we check hormones. What you have to know is you take a hormone and then your body metabolizes it. And if you're not with adequate nutrition, then it may metabolize it in a harmful way, creating a more dangerous metabolite than the hormone. A good example is the different metabolites of estrogen. You have the 2-hydroxyestrogens, you have the 16-hydroxyestrogens. The 4-hydroxyestrogens, and you want to ideally metabolize your estrogen toward the 2-hydroxyestrogens. That's the safe or anti-cancer estrogen, but if you're going in the other direction, the 4s or the 16s, that tends to increase the risk of cancer, and that's all related to nutrition.
How important is it to test estradiol, estrone, estriol? Is that a factor in how you want to monitor a patient?
Well, you bring up the point that there are three estrogens that a woman makes, and so there is no such hormone estrogen. It's the category. The hormones are estriol, estradiol, and estrone. Estriol is important because that's the anti-cancer estrogen, and estradiol and estrone will convert back and forth with each other. So you might want to check estriol levels and estradiol and estrone. Just, again, more importantly, checking the compounding pharmacy to make sure that they're giving you the hormones that you asked for.
It's those ratios that are very, very important to monitor because the situation changes.
Now, I see a lot of doctors who are, quote, prescribing bioidentical hormones, only prescribing estradiol. They don't put the estriol with it. So even though it's bioidentical, you're missing out on that anti-cancer estrogen.
It has also been something I've noticed that many times the doctors are only seeing their bioidentical hormone replacement therapy patients once a year. And I think that there can be such changes over a 12-month period that that could be an issue as well.
Definitely. You want to, you know, when it's done properly, it's really perfectly safe. And the women who are taking bioidentical hormones, they take good care of themselves. They're eating properly. They're exercising. They stay in good health. I'm sure the people in this study who were just given hormone replacement therapy, that's the drug approach. You know, I don't feel good here. Take this drug. And we don't care about the side effects. And just a little aside, there was another report today about anticholinergic drugs being associated with an increased risk of Alzheimer's disease. Now, what are anticholinergic drugs? The drugs like Benadryl, a lot of people take that.
A lot of people take that to sleep.
Exactly, yeah. And it was interesting in the article, they said 4 milligrams a day over a few-year period can increase that risk. Nobody takes 4 milligrams. They're taking a minimum of 25 milligrams. The other category, those are antihistamines. You have the drugs that women are given when they have urinary incontinence. That can be an issue. They even mentioned, you know, drugs like Xanax and, you know, some of the sleeping pills too. So, again, the moral is you take if you take a drug on a regular basis, that's the time you want to be concerned about side effects. If you take a drug now and then, it's usually not going to create a problem. But if you see yourself taking something every day, and I don't care what kind of drug it is, read the insert and know the side effects, and maybe you'll be motivated to remove the underlying cause of your problem rather than just taking the lazy way out and just taking a drug all the time.
And I'm going to chime in on that theme and tell people that they need to check the very tiny print on supplements that they may be taking, other ingredients, and some of the additional substances that might be found in vitamin, mineral, herbal supplement formulas. You need to be aware of what you're taking on a daily basis. I have seen in some very well-regarded mainstream products substances like polysorbate 80 and polyethylene glycol, not chemicals that you want to be taking on a daily basis.
You know, here again, it's all about being well-informed as a consumer. But right off the bat, I would think that people would say, well, if it's in a natural product, it must be safe to take. These companies have my best interests first. But, you know, it's a company, and the companies usually have profits first.
It's true. I think that there are some very, very high-quality companies in the natural supplement industry, and that those companies work very hard to maintain their reputation for providing quality products. But I think it's very important for the consumer to be very well informed.
So I think that about wraps it up for this point. I think the overall message is, check everything. President Reagan said, trust but verify.
Trust but verify. Okay, and on that note, Dr. Slavin, we're going to say goodbye to our listeners and thank them very much for tuning in to NaturalDocRadio.com.